Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Mitch Tyke. The Milwaukee Film Festival continues this week. We've been talking with a variety of filmmakers with movies showing at the festival in recent days. This iteration of the festival has been around since 2009, and director Marshall Curry's Racing Dreams was the film that started it all 5 years ago. The festival is honoring Curry this year with a tribute and a screening of his latest documentary, Point and Shoot. The recent film tells the unlikely but true story of Baltimore native Matthew Van Dyke, who ended up fighting with the rebels who ousted Libyan dictator Muammar Gaddafi. Lake Effect Bonnie North reached Marshall Curry via Skype in his office in New York, and he explained where this all began for him.
I actually didn't know the story before getting an email one morning from Matt Van Dyke, who introduced himself and told me that he had returned from Libya recently, where he had been fighting with the rebels to overthrow Gaddafi, and that he had this amazing footage of his time there. And not only that, there had been a multi-year 30,000-mile motorcycle trip through northern Africa and the Middle East that had preceded it. And he said he thought it would make an interesting film. I told him then that I only worked on films that I had full creative independence and control of, and he agreed to that, and so then came to New York, he and Lauren, his girlfriend, who's also in the film, and they sat down with my wife, who is a producer on the project, and me, and they told us this incredible story. It is just an amazing journey of a kid, you know, a sheltered kid that had never really left home, who has obsessive compulsive disorder, who sets off on what he describes as a crash course in manhood that takes him all over the Middle East. And when they finished the story and left, my wife and I just couldn't stop talking about it. It raises so many questions about war and violence and manhood. How do we define manhood and the way that we use cameras to define ourselves? And it was just an incredibly rich topic. So not long after that, I took a camera crew down to Baltimore and shot the interview that makes up the spine of the movie.
There's a part, it's closer to the end of the film, when he's actually fighting in Libya with his friends and Libyan colleagues, where he says, I think there's a voiceover where he says that it was the most filmed conflict in history, because everyone had a cell phone. And there was this really interesting disconnect of like trying to both film what you're doing and do what you're doing.
That was really one of the things that drew me to the story, was exactly what you're describing. I mean, there's footage that he shot where you see Libyan rebels standing up, spraying machine gun fire in the middle of battle, and around them there are four other rebels with their cell phones filming this guy shooting the machine gun. And it was so amazing to see, because I think with the ubiquity of cell phone cameras, I can say for myself, I think of it as an American issue. You know, how when you go on vacation, are you truly on vacation, or are you looking for photo ops to post on Facebook of your vacation?
Exactly.
And to see it play out in the middle of a Libyan civil war, you've got these guys who are incredibly self-sacrificing, high-minded, you know, risking their lives to overthrow a dictator of their country. And yet at the same time, they want to look like action heroes from Hollywood movies that they've seen and loved. And they want to have videos and photos to paste on Facebook and to, you know, tweet out to their girlfriends. And that was really, really striking to me.
Do you think that is the world we are living in now? I mean, have we shifted to that pretty much full time?
I think so. And I think we're really right at the tipping point of that. 10 years ago, when I was making my first documentary, that was a question that documentary filmmakers had to struggle with. You know, how can you be involved in a moment? How can you be fully present as a human being in a moment, and at the same time think about whether your camera's in focus and whether you're framing a shot in an interesting way and whether the light is reflecting off the person's face properly? Those were problems that were kind of inside baseball documentary problems. And now that we have cell phones, cameras, and everybody has become kind of a brand manager of their personal brand, we're so aware of the way that we come across. And I think it's a really rich and important question. You know, I'm not even positive it's entirely, the spread of it is definitely modern, but I was at a Civil War battleground not long ago, and the museum there had these daguerreotypes of, you know, the 17-year-olds that were about to go out on the battlefield, each having their picture taken holding a gun. And I realized that, you know, those are the early versions of the selfies that American troops in our film and also Libyan rebels were taking of themselves.
One of the things that was so interesting to me, I knew because of working in the media, I knew of Matt Van Dyke's story. It was all over the place, but I hadn't paid a whole lot of attention to it and, of course, didn't know anything about him at all. And a good part of your film is getting to know who this person is and why he chose to do what he did. Were you surprised by him in any way when you sat down to actually film the story? You asked him some pretty penetrating questions.
I was surprised. You know, when you hear about an American who goes off to join a Libyan civil war, you have a certain type of person maybe that comes to mind. And when I met Matt, he told me that, you know, he had grown up, you know, without a lot of friends, spoiled, living in his, you know, home with his mother and his grandmother. There's a great line where he says, "I was the only child of an only child of an only child." And he was very coddled growing up. He suffers from a very severe obsessive compulsive disorder that keeps him from being able to drive a car because he worries if he goes over a bump that maybe he hit somebody and 20 minutes down the road, he has to turn around and go back. So he stops driving cars. He's afraid of sugar or anything sticky or sweet, so he won't have soda or syrup or anything like that in his house. So that was not the kind of person who I expected to go and fight in a Libyan civil war. And the journey that took him from you know, his mother and grandmother's basement to the front lines of Libya, it's a
strange and incredibly dramatic story.
I was surprised by him as well. And here's a guy, like you said, who suffers from a very severe handicap in living in the world. And yet he managed to take himself off on this 30,000-mile bike ride around places that aren't clean, that, you know, at least not by our standards, you know, who have very different senses of how things are done. You share food, you share utensils, you share lots of stuff. And yet he somehow managed to negotiate through that and survive it. He also survived prison.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think there were two things that helped him survive. One is his friend Nori. When he was traveling, he met a Libyan hippie that is this incredibly sweet, generous guy who kind of takes Matt under his wing. And when the civil war starts in Libya, Matt and Nori are kind of a team. And I think that helped smooth things over. I also think, you know, Matt explained to me that that his OCD gets worse when he is able to control the situation. So if he is in his apartment, he feels like he needs to clean things obsessively and he gets obsessed about whether he got sugar on him, you know, whether sugar contaminated him or something. But when he's out in the middle of the chaos of battle in Libya, he kind of surrenders to his surroundings. He doesn't have the control, and that puts his OCD at ease a bit.
It frees him in a way.
In a way, yeah. So as you said, he while he was there, he was captured and spent 5.5 months in solitary confinement in two terrible Libyan prisons. I mean, he was in this room that was, you know, 4 by 7 feet. You know, not a big room, And there were bugs that would crawl out of the toilet, and the food was horrible. And he said that actually triggered his OCD pretty badly, and it was an extremely traumatic 5.5 months.
Do you know if he's undergone counseling since he's been back?
He didn't get the OCD while he was traveling. So yes, I know that even when he first, you know, when it first started to emerge when he was in high school, he did talk to therapists about it.
I was just wondering, you know, not so much the OCD, but dealing with the PTSD of being in prison,
right,
and being in battle.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. He says that he has not had terrible PTSD as a result of his time there. So I don't know whether he has talked to people since he's been back.
Yeah.
But it, certainly from the footage, it's traumatic. I mean, the war itself and the time that he spent in prison is it's almost hard to watch in some sections of the film. So I can only imagine what it was like to be there.
To live there. Well, the other right. person that I found fascinating in the film is the long-suffering girlfriend, Laura. and they've been
Lauren, right.
Lauren, sorry. And they've been together a long time. And she kind of expects things from him that, and she puts up with things from him that
right.
maybe other people wouldn't. What was your take on their relationship and how that helped him do what he did, both in the 30,000-mile journey and being a freedom fighter?
Well, it's certainly an unusual relationship. And maybe the truth is everybody's relationship
it's
is unusual
strange.
When you dig in deep
yep.
enough. But she said that she also is a fiercely independent person and that, frankly, she felt like it had done their relationship some good to have months apart, you know, to be together for a couple of months and then to be apart for a number of months. That said, I know that the time when he was captured, she did not know whether he'd been killed, whether he was being held prisoner. All that she knew was he told her he was going to go to a town that he thought at the time was going to be a safe town. And that was the last she heard of him. And she turned on the TV the next morning. CNN reported that Gaddafi's troops had just overrun this town in sort of a surprise blitzkrieg, I guess, of the town. So that was extremely difficult for her and for Matt's mom, who also was, you know, doing everything they could to try to find out what had happened to him. And when he finally gets out of prison, the war still wasn't over, and he decided to stay and continue to fight, which I think put a real strain on their relationship. But ultimately, I think she decided that, you know, if this was an important thing to him, that it was something that she supported him doing.
When you were talking with him, gathering a lot of the footage that we see is, as you say, his. It's stuff that he was filming when he was there.
Right.
What did you come away with? What did you think at the end of all of this and when the film was complete?
I mean, it's a film that asks a lot more questions, I think, than it answers. And in fact, the movie ends with an unanswered question.
Yes, it sure does.
I ask him, you know, whether his crash course in manhood was successful, and we cut just before he answers it. I really wanted the audience to engage with Matt and engage with questions on their own and wrestle with them. And not necessarily to point them toward what I thought the answers were. The structure that I came across, that I decided to build the film around, was to kind of reproduce the experience that my wife and I had when we first met Matt, and we just listened to him tell his story for a couple of hours. And I used to love hitchhiking, and you would get to sit in somebody's car, in a stranger's car, for a number of hours and ask them questions about their lives. And people are amazingly forthcoming to hitchhikers. Or maybe if you meet somebody on an airplane or a train ride or in a bar. I didn't want to make a biopic about Matt Van Dyke. I didn't want to make the 60 Minutes story where I'm trying to pin him down and have arguments with him. I really wanted to just have that experience of meeting an extraordinary person and having him share his story and his point of view with the world. And people walk away with very different feelings about Matt and about the things that he did. And I love that. I mean, I've gone to restaurants after screenings and overheard people having arguments at the table about the movie. And to me, that's really the goal of making a documentary, is to is to get people to see the world in a slightly different way and to get them to engage deeply with it.
Well, and you succeeded. I can't imagine not having conversations and not having a strong opinion.
Right.
One way or the other, or a number of different ways about him, because he's pretty ruthless about who he is. He's pretty honest.
He is. I mean, he was very willing to talk about mistakes that he had made and failings and his very conscious decision to kind of go on a crash course in manhood. I mean, even the concept of that is so interesting to me. You know, I think most people think of manhood as something that you get as a byproduct of some other experience, not as the goal. And frankly, people define that concept of manhood very, very differently. And it's also been a hot question among audiences is do you have to go and get involved in a war or have motorcycle adventures to consider yourself a man? And I think Matt's view of manhood changed somewhat over the course of the film as well.
Yeah, I was going to say it's almost a boy's own adventure initially, and then this idea of having to go on a quest, which is very, very ancient and crosses many, many cultures.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, people that have seen the film said, you know, it's sort of a cross between Lawrence of Arabia and Into the Wild, which I thought was kind of a nice twist. But yeah, the question is who is Matt? Is he Ernest Hemingway in the Spanish Civil War going over to fight a dictator? Is he the kid in Into the Wild? Is he Lawrence of Arabia? Who is Matt Van Dyke? And that is a question that I love hearing audiences debate.
Marshall, I want to thank you so much for taking time to talk to us about Point and Shoot.
Thank you. It's really fun talking to you.
Marshall Curry is the director of the documentary Point and Shoot, which will show tomorrow evening at the Oriental Theater and Thursday at the Times Cinema as part of the Milwaukee Film Festival. He spoke with Bonnie North. You can see a trailer and read more about the film from a link at wuwm.com/lakeeffect. Milwaukee area native Andy Mozina's latest collection of short stories is recently out. We'll talk about quality snacks when Lake Effect returns on WUWM.